After all is said and done, more is said than done. According to the Gospel of Matthew, that isn't all bad. I can't count the number of times that I've said or I've caught the Bible arguing with itself. And I say that because it does. And I can't hide it. It's not because I haven't read the Bible. It's because I've read it. And because it's true. Life is too complicated for it not to do that. The Bible is like love. It's a many-splendored thing. Sometimes it encourages and refreshes. Sometimes it stings and judges. And there are those scriptures that strain good sense. How are we to understand this weird story of Jesus paying his taxes with coins that he tells Peter to go find in the floppy's mouth? I'd kind of like to do that myself. Or the one, that's in Matthew 17, if you want to check it out. The one that he healed a crazy man by casting demons into a herd of pigs, and then they run over a cliff and fall into the ocean and drown. That's in Mark 5. Which one's the craziest? Well, it's no wonder that people seldom read their Bibles. When the Bible argues with itself, it's not just mentally demanding, it's morally exacting. Whoever looks on a woman with lust has already committed adultery in his heart. Media never let Jimmy Carter forget that. The media can't understand what Jimmy Carter meant by that. Not Jimmy's fault, but it's reality. Or this one, if somebody clobbers you on the cheek, you turn the other cheek. Now, the bullies like to cite that one. Back in the 80s, I can remember the women's lib movement was coming on until the ERA failed. And I used to hear women quote Paul, always out of context, of course. And he's talking to a Greek church in Thessaloniki, and he says, I wouldn't have you to be ignorant, brethren. Well, the ladies would omit the copula so it could say, I wouldn't have you ignorant, brethren. There's some relief in scholarly words like hyperbole and exaggeration and parable, but they take us so far. And there's today's text that flies in the face of what most of us think. It's what you say that counts. There's so many scriptures that say the opposite. The one who hears these sayings and does them, that one is like a man who builds his house on the rock and not on the sand. And then Matthew adds for good measure, so we'll get it. Be ye doers of the word and not just hearers. And that fits the narrative of the way most of us think. Actions speak louder than words. The doers think a cup of cold water to a thirsty man is far more important than listening to somebody preach on Sunday morning. It's just words. And yet, Matthew turns that upside down. By your words, you will be justified. By your words, you stand condemned. On this, the Bible not only argues with itself, it contradicts the low self-esteem that we have for the plethora of words in our time. Surely, this is a misprint. And didn't Jesus just say that a tree is known by its fruit? Good fruit, good tree. Bad fruit, bad tree. And that has to mean that what we do counts, not what we say. The passage rightly gets quoted to minimize all the blathering speeches we have to endure and to elevate the importance of social activism. Don't misunderstand. I'm not saying what we do isn't important. I'm saying that's not what Matthew means. When Jesus said, "We're known by our fruits," he was referring to the seduction of pretenders. Wolves, he's talking about, that go around in sheep's clothing to fool us, to pretend to be something they're not. False prophets telling people what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear. So fruits are not deeds in that context. In fact, by their actions, they're like sheep. It's when they speak by their words. It's when they speak that the wolves are exposed. By their fruits you shall know them. In that situation means that by their speech the wolves are revealed. It's what you say that counts. In chapter 15, just three other chapters over, Jesus identifies the root of what really corrupts us. It's not what goes into somebody from the outside that defiles, said he. Rather, it's what comes from the inside out. That is what nails us. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Another toughie is the topic of discussion in the preceding paragraph about the unpardonable sin. Now, there's a whole lot of discussion about the nature of that one thing that is unforgivable. There's one, only one thing. Everything else is good. Stealing, adultery, even murder. You can be forgiven for that. But whatever you do, make sure you stay away from the unpardonable sin. And yet, with all the uncertainty about it, there's one thing about it that is clear. The unpardonable sin is a sin of speech, not deed. Whoever speaks against the Holy Spirit will not be forgiven. It's what you say. Now, that makes it hard in our society because we don't take speeches seriously. I mean, who takes speeches seriously anymore? Mostly because people can say anything, and people do say anything that is as incredulous, some of the speeches we hear. And we get burned over and over again by those who say one thing and do something else. Deeds matter. Talk is cheap. You say, sticks and stones break my bones, but words will never harm me. What are words? Trying to change the world with a speech is like trying to break up a concrete floor with light bulbs. Whatever our culture's lowest state, no estimate of our speech may be, if Jesus thinks they're important, then maybe we ought to take a second look. Sometimes deeds are easier than words. Deeds are a lot easier to do something than to say some words. Why do men go out and buy candy and gifts on Valentine's Day, just 11 days away? It's easier than saying, "I love you." Hard sometimes it is to say those words. It's easier to buy a gift. Here, eat this candy. As long as I don't have to say, "I love you." You know I love you, but I don't want to say it. That's Valentine's for a lot of us. Some things are just hard to discuss, like politics. Sit around a table with somebody that's laying your political views low, that's hard. It's hard to listen to that. Or family matters. Some things we can say around anybody in the world except family. I can remember squirming when it came time to talk to our daughters about sex. I said as little as I could to get away with. Y'all need to learn what goes where and left the rest of it up to their mama. Why is it those three letter word, is such a hard thing to talk about? Last week, man, the History Channel, one of the three I watch out of 200, was featuring President Roosevelt's famous declaration of war speech. Man, I sat there transfixed by those words. You talk about words. He was in front of Congress, and he started out. He quoted the speech to his secretary, and she typed it up for him. And he started out, "Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, is a day that will go down in history." He erased that and changed it to infamy. He noted the hostility that existed throughout the entire Pacific, how America was in grave danger in terms of readiness. By comparison, the German infantry had 200 divisions. Japan had 100 divisions, not counting cavalry and armor. America had one. One. And that was before the sleeping giant was awake. FDR was stricken with polio. And that day, his greatest fear was walking down the aisle at the Capitol and not falling in front of the whole world. Because he couldn't walk. It was a struggle, arm in arm with his son, just to make it up to the podium. But he did. And no man ever looked taller. No man ever stood taller than President Roosevelt that fateful day. This giant of a leader, confined to a wheelchair, inspired a demoralized nation and carried the world on his shoulders with a brief speech that lasted only 6 minutes. And concluded with these monumental words, "No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people, in their righteous might, will win through to absolute victory with confidence in our armed forces and our unbounded determination of the American people. We will gain the inevitable triumph." And then this, "So help us God." Words. They're just words. And words like that make things happen. Now, I'm not talking about all this vulgarization of speech we have today. Plastered, these silly little things plastered around everywhere. Abbreviations like ROFL or OMG. Oh, my God. Don't y'all get sick of that? I wish just once. One time, God, somebody, "Oh, my God." And God says, "Speak your business." That'd stop it. How we long for genuine and heartfelt words that create new situations. In 1517, Martin Luther tacked his 95 theses to the door of the Castle Church at Wittenberg. The Pope pitched a hissy fit. But with great courage, Luther stood his ground and thundering those historic words. I cannot, I will not recant anything. To go against conscience is neither right nor safe. For here I stand, I can do no other, so help me God. So help me God. Amen. Sounds like FDR, doesn't it? So help us God. Four little words that kicked off the Protestant Reformation. Now, Luther had a vivid belief in the devil. So, tradition has it, they threw an ink bottle at him one night and hit him. So, when we sang A Mighty Fortress this morning, did you notice in stanza number 3, every time I sing that, it just stands out to me, one little word shall fail him. One little word can doom the devil. Now, what is that little word, I ask myself? Your opinion, I'd like to hear sometime. What is that one little word that shall fail the devil? And I conclude that the word is God, a little three-letter word, God. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. Words cause things to be. Let there be light. And there was light. 8 little words, and the light overcame the darkness. Words cause things to happen. A couple stands in front of the preacher. Now all they have to do is say 2 little words. I do. And when the preacher says, by the authority vested in me, those 2 little words, I do. With those 2 little words, a new home is created. And babies are born to grow up to change the world. And just 2 little words do all that. It's what you say. It's what you say. If you mean what you say. A man sitting around a table with his buddies. Supper was over. He took a leftover loaf of bread. And then he took a cup that still had some wine in it. And he said these words, this is my body. This is my blood. Just 9 little words after supper, that became an eternal sacrament. I can still remember when people used to say, I give you my word. And it meant something. Wouldn't we like to have those times back? It meant something because when they said, I give you my word, they kept their word. Like that young boy who tried out for the Little League baseball team. That was a year that a new coach came to town. And the lad was so excited that he couldn't wait for the season to start. And so he called the coach after he got moved in, just so he would know who he was, made out the lineup. And he wanted to know when was the first practice. After he told him, the boy thanked the coach and he assured him, I'll be there, coach. And then promptly proceeded to drive those around him crazy till the day of practice finally arrived. Is it here yet? Is it here yet? Whew, it's here. Maybe he'll shut up. And sure enough, the day arrived and it rained. And it quickly became one of those frog stranglers. But didn't bother the boy. That afternoon, he still took off on his bicycle for the ball field. And that pouring down rain, and after standing alone on home plate, getting drenched in the downpour, nobody else showed up. Finally, he's had enough. But before going home, he decided to go across the street to the coach's house just to make sure. Of course, the coach rightly assumed that nobody would be crazy enough to show up in that weather. And when he answered the door, he told the boy, "The field is flooded. We can't practice. It's been called off." And the disappointed boy said to the coach, "I told you I'd be there, coach." He hadn't caught on yet, had he? You don't say you're going to do something with certainty. You got to leave yourself some wiggle room out in there. Like, "God willing, the creek don't rise, I'll be there." That wasn't what he said. Or, "If the Lord doesn't return before then, I'll try to be there." And they will think you're crazy. But he didn't say that either. He said, "I'll be there, coach." He'll learn someday when he grows up how to say it. But then, wouldn't it be great if that stubborn dependability could impact every miserable life, every broken home, every corrupt nation, just 5 little monosyllables? "I give you my word." Now that the boy grew up, I still try to do what I say I'll do, whether folks think I'm crazy or not. Because anybody who's been taught to believe the Bible knows that's how we ought to live. Like the man said, it's what you say that matters. As long as you do what you say.